Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector, an independent financial advisor, or an institutional investor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. This episode is part of our Mind Over Market series, and today we're tackling one of the most talked about shifts in investing right now, the convergence of public and private markets. For years, the rules were simple. Public companies were open to everyone, and if you had a stockbroking account, you could buy in. Private markets, on the other hand, were the preserve of institutions, pension funds, and the ultra-wealthy. But something fundamental is changing. Hedge funds, venture capital, and private equity are no longer as exclusive as they once were. You can even buy exchange-traded funds with exposure to private companies. The numbers are striking. McKinsey estimates this trend could shift between $6 trillion and $10 trillion globally over the next 5 years. And in South Africa, we're already seeing record inflows into hedge funds from ordinary investors. The big question, though, is whether the democratization of access is a step forward for investors or just another layer of complexity that's hard to navigate. To unpack this, I'm joined by Sean Neatling, Head of Investments at Morningstar South Africa again. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Thanks, Ruan. Looking forward to the chat.
Let's start right at the beginning. We hear a lot about this convergence of public and private markets, but what does it actually mean and why should regular investors care?
Yeah, Ruan. So I think in terms of the convergence, it simply means access to private markets is getting closer to the experience investors have or are currently experiencing in public listed markets. I think it's still some way off, especially so in South Africa, but the global trend is shifting strongly towards making private assets more available to retail investors. I think in terms of what it actually means for investors, there's maybe three things that I would cite that stand out. I think the first is really that it widens the opportunity set for more active fundamental investors. So public assets that would traditionally make up a large percentage of an investor's portfolio, those assets are trading at pretty expensive levels, and I suppose that's the most obvious and pronounced in U.S. equities. So the choice and the ability to invest in a broader pool of potentially better priced opportunities in private markets is a good thing for capital allocators. I think secondly, and probably most importantly, it improves diversification, especially in, you know, where you're using portfolios with traditional bonds and equities, and those maybe haven't provided that offset when you've had these very pronounced market sell-offs. So I think that added diversification from private is important in an environment where the outlook for inflation and interest rates is somewhat more uncertain, especially in a world where you have shifting political and geopolitical landscapes. And that really affects the way that capital flows. So I think tariffs are a really good example of that. And that's why I think a mix of public and private will respond differently. And then third, it's a bit of a cliche, but this democratization, which is really sort of breaking down barriers between markets, is actually a good thing. I think a few years ago, if you wanted to invest in alternatives like hedge funds, you needed to be pretty wealthy and almost qualified to put money into those investments. So the ability to invest in companies that are choosing to stay private for longer, like a SpaceX or a Stripe, you know, through a normal brokerage account is a major development in terms of, I suppose, the future of investing. These are already sizable companies that trade outside of a public environment that potentially offer investors better growth prospects by staying private. So I think those are three things that I'd really cite in terms of, you know, where this convergence is moving to and what it actually means.
Sean, for a private investor like myself, this is pretty overwhelming. So are we genuinely democratizing access to sophisticated investments or just creating more complex products that the average investor like myself or my advisor will struggle to understand?
Yeah, Ruan, that's a great question. I think both. I think on one end, giving regular investors access to investments that were previously only available to pension funds and a select group of individuals is a good thing. But I think on the other hand, these products are inherently more complex. So when you buy a regular stock, for example, you know exactly what you're getting. But with more hybrid products, you probably need to understand things like liquidity, the fee structures, how those things are valued. And I think risk factors that most retail investors wouldn't have encountered before. And then I also think it's important to almost disentangle this, let's call it substance over form. So I think if you cast your mind back to 2008, you know, people would probably cite like mortgage-backed securities as the reason or one of the reasons for the decline. But mortgage-backed securities by themselves are actually really good investments. It's the way that they were packaged and the amount of capital that actually flowed into those structures. So the structures became problematic because of demand. And then basically sort of Wall Street packaging, I suppose, products that weren't in investors' best interest off the back of that. But the underlying pool of assets, you know, mortgage-backed securities is not necessarily a bad investment. So I think it's important to disentangle, you know, the substance in terms of what you're actually buying from what that's wrapped in terms of the form of the underlying investment structure.
Sean, globally, fees have been converging as passive investing puts pressure on active strategies. But when you start mixing public and private assets, it gets tricky, especially when half the portfolio doesn't trade every day. How do investors know if they are paying a fair price?
Yeah, so I think pricing is definitely a challenge, but pricing any asset is actually a lot more subjective than probably what even most professional investors would concede to. So price is ultimately determined by supply and demand and the concept of a willing buyer, willing seller. Even public assets use estimates of fair value to price assets, and whether that's, you know, through market or peer multiples or comparables, or even, I suppose, more analytical discounted cash flows or IRR models. Those are still best estimates. I think the main difference with private markets is that you don't get that liquidity and transparency that helps price discovery and price efficiency. So I think, you know, there are structures that have better frameworks. Example, interval funds are priced using the net asset value, their NAV, which is calculated sometimes daily and at least weekly. And this better allows, I suppose, the value of those underlying assets to be priced. So, you know, with those types of funds, you can purchase shares at the NAV on any trading day, and that can be sold back to the fund through, I suppose, periodic repurchases at the NAV. So I think there are structures that are better priced, but I think this is where the investment horizon and holding periods come in, particularly for private assets. I think with anything that trades with lower liquidity, you know, you're adopting from a portfolio perspective more of a buy to hold or buy to, let's call it, maintain type approach. And you certainly don't want to be forced sellers of these types of assets. Ultimately, you know, if something is worth $100, you don't want to be selling something for $50 just because your investment horizon doesn't actually match, you know, what the substance of that investment actually is.
Sean, Morningstar recently launched an index that's 90% listed equities and 10% private companies like SpaceX, for example. Is this the future of benchmarking? And are you using this index or anything like it in your own portfolio construction?
Yeah, Ron, so I think at Morningstar, as we observe trends in markets that have, I suppose, more permanence as opposed to things that are more cyclical, we try to review the relevance of the frameworks that we use to assess those markets. So it's called the Modern Market Index, and that really bridges, you know, public and private markets. And essentially, it captures the performance of 100 of the largest and most influential U.S. companies. So these are 90 public and 10 private companies. And the intention here is really to shift how investors can approach equity investing in a market landscape that's actually evolving really quickly. So if you think about something like the S&P 500, you know, it tracks the biggest public or listed companies. But at the same time, some of the most valuable and fastest growing companies, whether that's Stripe or SpaceX or something like OpenAI, these companies have chosen to stay private for longer. So when you actually measure what the market is, if you're purely just benchmarking or leaning into public listed assets, you're actually missing large chunks of the actual economy. So I think it's a better measure of the, let's say, the full opportunity set. And it's really the start of building something from a Morningstar perspective that we think is set up for investability. So here we're looking at transparent pricing, we're looking at liquidity screens, and also semi-annual rebalancing that supports implementation and also, let's call it, operational efficiency. To your question, is it the future? Maybe. I think, you know, it definitely helps to start thinking about structural trends that could shape our thinking over the next 10 plus years. And again, at Morningstar's long-term investors, it's an important part of our process. We don't directly invest in it currently. It's still pretty early days for us, but we do use it to assess different measures of risk and reward, again, in an environment that's shifting really quickly.
Sean, something that's really kind of, I've been thinking about. If everyone can now access private markets, do they even remain private in inverted commas? And And does that distinction matter anymore?
Yeah, Ron, that's a great question. Look, I think the market is still very far away from having the scale where private markets completely dissolve into a more public opportunity set. So not all assets or private assets would actually qualify for inclusion. So I don't think private gets completely diluted. You're more than likely just moving to a potentially more efficient structure where your higher quality private assets are just getting more access to capital. So it's really not that dissimilar to thinking about how capital tends to be more free flowing into, let's say, larger listed companies over smaller companies. But it is a particularly interesting philosophical question with real practical implications. I think private markets were or are valuable partly because, you know, they are inefficient. And if you had the connections, I suppose, and the network and the capital to get in, you could, as an investor, find undervalued opportunities. But if you're now moving into a world where millions of retail investors can now access, you know, those same deals through whether it's ETFs or mutual funds, you know, does that efficiency advantage disappear? Again, I think as the market develops over time, the answers to those questions will become, you know, more evident. So that, I suppose, is a nice way of me saying I don't know.
Well, let's talk about the conversion, which is mostly a global trend. But South Africa is seeing record inflows into hedge funds driven by ordinary investors. How do you see this trend playing out locally and putting you on the spot now? Is it ultimately a good thing or a bad thing?
So I think it's important, especially from a South African context, to consider the full mix of alternatives that are available in the local market. So, you know, the way we look at it at Morningstar is that includes hedge funds that have attracted a lot of attention. But we should probably expand this mix to include infrastructure, renewables, commodities, and even some parts of the listed credit market. And that's before you even get to the fully private on the equity and the debt side. So I think regulation still has a long way to go in South Africa to make these types of investable at scale for retail investors. But large parts of the institutional market already allocates across these assets. So I think parts of the opportunity set do provide really attractive opportunities from a portfolio perspective. And I think that's really the key for me. I think it's massively important to consider this through the lens of, you know, meeting or investors meeting their overall investment goals. And I think to focus too narrowly on any one of the underlying assets is probably incomplete. It's more about how you use non-traditional or private assets that can be combined with more traditional bonds and equities to deliver better outcomes for investors. So I think to directly answer your question, you know, good or bad, I would say the development is a good thing, but the context and application is extremely important.
Before we wrap up, let's talk about transparency. Public markets are regulated and highly scrutinized with daily disclosures and reporting standards, but private markets aren't nearly as clear. As access widens, how should investors and advisors think about disclosure, valuation, and transparencies in these kinds of assets?
Yeah, Ron, I think, you know, when we look at public versus private, again, I think, again, the main difference that you're seeing here is, you know, in public markets, it really is in the public domain. So you get a really good sense about, you know, what investors or pool of different investors think any asset is worth. I think when it comes to private assets, I think there's a few points that's important to note. The first is, you know, you need to use a different lens for different types of assets. So private equity, you know, the economics of those and the fundamentals of those assets is very different to debt and to fixed income. And I also think you need to understand sort of the underlying investors in those different strategies. So again, I think, you know, South Africa lags to a certain extent. But if you look at it globally, you know, Morningstar, what we've tried to do is start coverage, for example, on what we call semi-liquid funds. And that's really identifying strategies, again, which we think, you know, potentially offers investors really good opportunities. Not only on a standalone basis, but also as part of their portfolios. So I think the transparency piece is probably where most education needs to take place from a private market perspective at this point in time. I think there are some really good investments, like I mentioned, interval funds that are a bit more understandable with really solid transparency and pricing frameworks in the background. And then I also think there are other structures which are somewhat more opaque. So I think as we go through this transition and as we move, you know, into a world where private can comprise a bigger portion of an investor's portfolio, I think it's going to be important for these investors or investments to be better covered, and also to distinguish between really good investments and I suppose identify those that are not necessarily aligned to investors' goals.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Sean, for joining us on the show and helping me unpack how the public-private convergence trend is reshaping the way we think about markets and investor access. We will speak to you again next month for another Mind Over Markets discussion. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uister, and my producer, Joe Lowe, from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Yono.fm. All Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on our website. So please go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.